Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
I'm sitting there like, how am I going to share about hope when right now I'm feeling this excruciating pain in an area where there is no more hope? I mean, it's just not ever going to happen.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
And power. It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We are not.
You're not
the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, I'm Meredith Foster. From the time Michelle Lewis was a little girl, she had a dream. Her greatest desire in life was to be a wife and a mother. She imagined what her husband would be like and their house and their life. She was going to be a stay-at-home mom and do what she was passionate about. She would have and nurture children. Psalm 37:4 says, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." So what do you do when God calls you to let go of your dream, but hold on to him? This is chapter 29 of Epic, Michelle Lewis' story.
Well, so my backstory would go back to kind of thinking about the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would always have answered that question that I wanted to be a mom. I was not ever really a career-minded person. Like, what is your job goal? I want to be a mom. And so that was always my desire. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. My grandma was a stay-at-home mom. And I wanted to be like them. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to nurture little people. And so that's always been my life goal. When I was in my early 20s, I had planned out my wedding.
Wow.
I mean, I knew what I wanted my wedding to look like. I knew what colors I wanted. I knew what I wanted my dress to look like. And so being a mom automatically means being married to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a single mom, but if I could help it. And so for me, it equaled husband that had a job that I could stay home and care for my family, mm-hmm. And my children. And so that was always my goal. And so even when I entered into college, I was there to get an education and I was there to learn. But I really wanted to find my husband in college and get married and have the two kids and the house with the white picket fence and all of that. Mm-hmm. And that never happened. Never happened. So if you fast forward to now, I'm 45 and I've never been married and I don't have any children. And it's not because I've been this perfect angelic person my entire adult life. I did not stay pure as an adult, but I never had children. And it wasn't until about 5 years ago that I discovered why I was not able to have children. And so when I was 40, I had to have a hysterectomy.
How did you discover that?
I'd always had health issues in that area from the time I was a teenager. And then as I got older, they got worse. And we tried everything to alleviate that problem. And the final kind of the final straw, if you will, was the only thing we can do now is give you a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, they would never have even imagined sending me that direction because I wasn't 40 and I hadn't had kids yet. And so usually they will not do a hysterectomy if you're not over the age of 40 and you haven't had kids. So when I hit the magic age of 40, we had exhausted all other options. That was the final option that was available. And so that's what ended up happening. So prior to that, I had already made the decision that I didn't want to be a 40-year-old person with chasing around a little kid. For me, I knew that wasn't, I just didn't have the energy level to be able to do that. And so I had made a decision, you know, I'm not going to have my own kids after the age of 40. So even if I met my husband the day after I turned 40 and we got married, I think we might adopt, or if he already has kids, then I'll be a stepmom or whatever. And I was okay with that. But it's a very different thing when you make that decision and then the decision is made for you. Because when I made that decision, I could have changed my mind.
And if you knew that.
Right. If I had met my husband the next day and we got married, I could have changed my mind. But the decision was made for me at that point, and there was no turning back. So even if I had met my husband, I wouldn't have been able to have kids. So when I think about that time in my life, the past 5 years from then to now has been kind of a journey of redefining who I am, redefining what my goals are, what my dreams are, who I am as a woman. Like, how do you define yourself as a woman when you can't do the one thing that we were created
really
to do? And that was really my goal. And a lot of anger toward God, and just not understanding the why behind it. And so I've walked through this journey for 5 years, and I'm still on it, of trying to rediscover me apart from that desire. And just kind of mourning the loss of that dream, loss of that dream.
That's a real grief.
It is.
Right? To give that up, especially as important as it was to you.
Mm-hmm.
How did that grief manifest in your life?
It manifests in depression. So I isolate myself. I withdraw from life in general. And even if I am interacting, I'm not a very nice person to be around. So I'm either a Debbie Downer, or I am the one that's going to pick a fight and be cantankerous and irritable. And so that's how it manifests itself personally and then within relationships.
Yeah.
And so...
And you're aware of it, I assume, when it's happening.
Yeah, I am. And there's usually a point where... There's a point initially where I just don't care. But then as more people start to notice it, then I start caring. And it kind of forces me to come out of it. And so those are probably guardrails that the Lord has put in my life to say, I'm not going to let you stay in this place. And so he keeps those guardrails around me to keep me from slipping back into that deep depression.
I'm curious if there was a gradual letting go, or did you really feel like it hit full force at 40 when the hysterectomy happened?
It was a gradual letting go. It's interesting because about a year ago now, it's been a year ago, I can't believe that, I was at an event at my church, and there was a young woman there who is in her late 30s, and she was pregnant for the first time. And I knew that she and her husband were trying to have kids for a while. And so the fact that she actually announced it to us was a big deal, because they had reached that threshold where they felt comfortable sharing. And as I was sitting around this table, all of the women around the table, except for me, had kids. And we were joking with her because apparently after age 35, you're considered a geriatric mother, which I think is hilarious.
Yes.
So we were laughing about that, and she was sharing about some of the extra things that she had to do as a mother-to-be over the age of 35. And then they got on the subject of the things that, the firsts that she's going to experience. So she hadn't felt the baby move yet. She hadn't felt the baby kick yet. And so they, being the other women at the table, were sharing what that experience is like. And I obviously had nothing to contribute to this conversation. And so I'm just sitting there quietly listening and kind of praying, okay, Lord, you know what's going on here. I need your help. And then finally, one of them said, it is the most amazing experience you will ever have in your life the first time you feel your baby move. And I just kind of looked down, and my friend put her hand on my leg and said, it's not too late for you, Michelle. And she had no idea. And I said, well, actually, it is. Unfortunately, I can't have kids. And that kind of brought home to me, it's not just the idea of having kids. I know I can have kids in other ways. I can be a foster mom. I can adopt. If I marry someone who already has kids, I'll be a stepmom. I have spiritual kids. But there are things about being a mom that I wanted to experience that I will never be able to experience. And that kind of led me into this a new level of grieving that I didn't have a definition for. It's grieving those things, not feeling my baby move, not being able to sing to my baby, not being able to hear my baby scream for the first time after it's born, or that feeling of looking into their face when they're laid on my chest. Those are the things that I mourn that I will never be able to experience. And so I had to go through another level of grieving, even 4 years after the fact. And I'm sure that other things like that will come up in the future. But it's wonderful how the Lord meets you in those places. Because the week after that happened, I was supposed to share a teaching on hope, on biblical hope, to our single moms ministry. And I'm sitting there like, how am I going to share about hope when right now I'm feeling this excruciating pain in an area where there is no more hope?
So how do you have hope when your dream is no longer possible? How do you look to God for hope when you know He could have healed you? That was the painful place Michelle Lewis found herself, and it's also the place where she found a hope stronger than anything she'd ever experienced. Part 2 of Michelle's story is coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. If you like today's show, we hope you'll head to our website to check out other episodes of Epic and maybe even share a podcast with a friend. You can do all of that at myfaithradio.com. Today we're hearing from Michelle Lewis. Here's part 2.
It's wonderful how the Lord meets you in those places. Because the week after that happened, I was supposed to share a teaching on hope, on biblical hope, to our single moms ministry. And I'm sitting there like, how am I going to share about hope when right now I'm feeling this excruciating pain in an area where there is no more hope? I mean, it's just not ever going to happen. There's no need for another virgin birth. I mean, there's no need for another miracle birth in the world. Jesus has already come, and I'm not going to be the one that breaks that mold. And so I feel like if it had not been for the fact that I had to share that teaching, I would have drifted into another season of depression and hopelessness. But the Lord had set that up at just the right time to keep me from falling back into that, and said, no, I'm going to grow you a little deeper. I'm going to make you go a little deeper here, but I have a safety net for you so you won't fall. So even in the midst of something that is so hard and not understanding why I'm going through it, God is there.
I'm curious, you mentioned this earlier because there's grief, but there's also that issue that God could have change the circumstances at any time.
He could have.
And that's, you can respond to that in a lot of ways. And I'm curious how you dealt with that.
I think the first thing is I was just honest with God. I think sometimes we're afraid to tell Him that we're angry.
Yeah.
But He already knows it anyway. And so He wants us to come to Him with those feelings. He wants us to be honest with Him about them. And so just being able to say, God, I'm really mad right now. I just don't get it. I don't understand why. It's not like what I wanted was an awful thing. Yeah. It's the most natural thing in the world. It's what you created women to do. But this one thing, you're keeping that from me, and I don't get it. And so just being honest with Him was really key. And I also have been blessed with family. with parents that I can trust with those things, with a mom that I can go to and say, I'm feeling this, and she'll give me wise advice. And just friends. I mean, God has really blessed me with a circle of friends that are there for me when I need them. And sometimes they don't even know that they're answering a prayer, that I need somebody to help me. Even if it's an unspoken prayer, God hears it, and he'll bring them around or to say something or do something that is a place of healing for me. But I think the key was really just honest prayers.
Were you ever tempted to say, walk away? If this is how God is, I don't need it?
Yeah, I think so. But I always go back to, because there are other things that have happened in my life where I'm sitting, proverbially sitting in at the edge of my bed, you know, crying so hard I'm choking on my tears, and like, why am I even doing this? But I always hear the words in my head, where else will I go? You have the words of eternal life. And I don't really think that it's that I am clinging to God at that point. I think that he has said, nope, you're mine. And I am doing things right now you don't like, but you just need to stay and trust me. And even when I don't want to stay and trust, I don't feel like there's any place else I can go. Mm-hmm. There's no, where else am I going to go? Even when I want to give up, there's like, that's not, there's no option. What does giving up look like?
I'm curious, when you were working on that talk about hope for the single moms, what was it that lifted you out of, what did you find as you were preparing that lifted you out of that place?
So I think what really helped was digging into what biblical hope really is. So when we think about hope, we use hope for a lot of different things. Like, I hope the Bears win on Sunday.
Right.
Good luck with that. I hope that I get asked out on a date, or I hope that this happens or that happens. And biblical hope is something totally different. It's an assurance of something that we've been promised by a trustworthy source that we know is going to happen. And we're just waiting. We're anxiously waiting. So biblical hope has a foundation in something that is not based in this world. It's based in God's promises and his trustworthiness. And so as I was studying that, it helped me to redefine, where am I placing my hope? Am I placing my hope in things that I can gain in this world? Am I placing my hope on finding my husband? Am I placing my hope on achieving a certain level of success? Am I placing my hope on anything, fill in the blank, that's attached to this world? Or am I placing my hope on the Lord? Because if I'm placing my hope on this world, then I am going to be constantly in a place of despair. But if I'm placing my hope in the Lord, even when things that happen in this world are despairing, I still can stand firm. I have a sure anchor in him, because I know that he's not going to change. His promises are not going to change, even if this world disintegrates around me. And so reminding myself of that really helped me to not fall into that despair and that hopelessness. And the other thing that I think was the difference is, sometimes we place our hope in the chance that our circumstances are going to change.
That's so tempting.
So, you know, a peripheral issue around this is the fact that I'm 45 years old and I still haven't met my husband yet. I love what Lisa Harper says. She says, my husband is lost and he won't ask for directions. And I feel like my husband is with her husband and they're both lost and neither one of them are going to ask for directions.
That's great.
I'm still waiting for that husband to come along. And I may never get married. I may live my entire life as a single person. But if my hope is in that, then where am I going to be? And so I can't place my hope in my circumstances changing.
Yeah.
And this particular situation is is an object lesson for me. It's a daily lesson for me that no, you can't place your hope in your circumstances changing, because this circumstance is not going to change. This is your reality for the rest of your life. You can either live in the pain of that, in the depression and the despair of that, or you can trust the Lord with it and let Him make something beautiful out of it. And one of the verses, I've always loved this verse, but it's become so much more meaningful for me since this whole situation, is Ecclesiastes 3:11. It says, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And so this does not feel very beautiful to me, but He does give us that beauty for our ashes. And so even in the midst of my pain, I've found that I can minister to other women who are struggling with something. Mm-hmm. It may not necessarily be this specific issue, but because I understand that unfulfilled longing, that feeling of emptiness and that unfulfilled longing, it's given me a more tender heart toward people who are struggling and who are hurting. And so even though it doesn't feel beautiful, God will bring beauty out of it if I surrender it to Him.
So where are you at today with this? Do you ever still struggle?
Oh, I do. Yeah. Sometimes I still get that twinge in my heart when we have baby dedications at church, and Mother's Days are still kind of hard for me. I think what helps with Mother's Day is I still have a living mom, and so I can focus on celebrating her, but it's still hard because I wanted to give her grandchildren, and so I wanted her to not just be a mommy, I wanted her to be a grandmommy. It's not like she makes me feel guilty about that. That's another blessing, but it's still something like, I really wish I could give you grandkids. And so it's still kind of hard sometimes, but the more that I allow God to use the experience, the easier it gets. I think it's the same thing with, like it is with sin. If you hide your sin, it'll eat you up inside. If you hide your hurt and your pain, it eats you up inside. But if you let it out, then you'll find healing. And so letting it out and sharing with others, like I said, is a part of the healing process. Mm-hmm. It's just another level. And so that's where I am today. There's a song by FFH that has always stuck with me ever since I heard it. And the chorus is, Lord, move in a way that I've never seen before, because there's a mountain in the way and a lock on the door. I'm drifting away. Waves are crashing on the shore. Lord, move or move me. It's a song that pops up in my head when things feel overwhelming, mm-hmm. when hurt or depression or hopelessness is overwhelming, that either I have to move or you have to move. Something's got to move.
Yeah.
I loved the song when it first came out, but it's become even more meaningful to me in this particular season of my life. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm in those moments of despair, it's something that the Lord brings to my mind, and I just find myself humming it. And it's kind of like a prayer that I'm humming in my heart all the time. Because I know that He's either going to move the situation, He's going to move or shift something to make it easier, or He's going to move me and make me stronger. Either way, I'm going to be stronger in the end, but either I'm going to have to move or the circumstance is going to have to move. And neither one of those things are going to happen unless the Lord does them. And so I love that song for that reason.
I think one of the things that's really evident about you, I think if someone was to describe characteristics of you, strong is definitely something that people would say. You are a very strong woman. Just, I don't know if you realize that, but I just wonder if that's, you know, this thorn in your flesh has built this strength in you that is evident to anybody who knows you.
I don't feel strong. I'm strong-willed. I'm about as stubborn as they come. Which can be a good thing or a bad thing. But you're not the first person that said that to me, but I don't feel it all the time. I do think that if it were not for the thorn, this is the thorn in my flesh, I would say. If I didn't have that, then that strong will and that stubbornness would manifest itself in more negative ways than it already does. Mm-hmm. So God uses this to keep me dependent on Him, I think.
Yeah.
But I sometimes feel like the weakest person in the room. So I can't say that it's something that it's not me. It's definitely not me. And it's odd to worship the Lord or thank the Lord for your weaknesses. But I'm grateful for my weaknesses because they force me to go deeper with Him. Mm-hmm. They force me to stay connected to Him and to cling to Him. And to even remind me that even when I'm clinging to Him, it's not me that's keeping me above water. It's really Him keeping me above water. So even though we don't like to talk about weakness, it's not a culturally cool thing to think about our weaknesses. As believers, that's where our strength is, because when we recognize our weaknesses, that's when we know we are not holding ourselves up. It's God that's holding us up, and it causes us to depend on Him more. And then we get to see Him do above and beyond anything we can ask or think.
It's a strange thing to be thankful for our weaknesses, but when you see God working and using them, there's something very fulfilling in that, and you begin to see how it's true. In our weakness, He really is strong. We're so grateful to Michelle for sharing her story. It takes a team to make each episode of Epic. Thanks to Jason Rackow and Ted Ross for production, Stephen Johnson for our show's theme song, and I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.